said that it would never, completely come.
She didn't really understand.
Yeah.
Didn't understand.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So
let's say that the volume of my voice, the volume, and we're going to go around this system. Here we have our system. Go around the system.
Answering my question.
What was your question?
Why can't it? Why isn't it perfect? A perfect response.
The answer to the question is because there's always an error message.
But why is there always an error message? I don't understand why it has to be that way. Why can't we reach the reference point?
Because you see, this reference point, the thing that drives this controller is this error. And if there's no error, the controller doesn't do anything.
So could
that make more sense?
Could we say that it's not that the error message goes to zero, but that it stops generating an error message?
No. It's
kind of like trying to keep the same.
Does the set point change? Or is the set point always the same in a person?
In this discussion,
yeah.
In this discussion, the set point is going to stay the same.
It will never change.
In this discussion,
okay.
Are there things that can change that set point? The answer is yes.
Okay.
But not in this discussion.
Does it never reach zero because the response of the controller is always a little bit less than the actual error signal?
Mm-hmm.
And so it will never, if the size of the error signal is big, the response will always be a little bit less. You just can have smaller and smaller interactions between that. That's why it never.
It's intentional.
I don't know if it's intentional or not. Because I don't know the designers. They didn't call and write. It's like former students.
They didn't
call. No, they'll call and write.
Oh.
Unless they have a problem. They know that they don't come for money.
I think that was the point of the overdamped versus the underdamped. It's like if it's overdamped, it doesn't go that full.
We're going to look at a system similar to that spring quarter.
I want to do an experiment.
Okay. I want you to. Can you reach out your one hand? Okay. I want you to touch my finger and touch your nose.
At the same time.
No, touch my finger and then touch your nose. Okay? Touch my finger and touch my nose. Touch your nose. Touch my finger and touch your nose. Touch my finger and touch your nose.
Touch my finger and touch your nose. Okay? Now you notice what happens there, which you don't think about that you're doing, is that you have decided where my finger is. Okay? The cerebellum has done some processing. And along with the cerebral cortex, has devised a plan for you to follow. And as you get closer and closer to my finger, the system looks at the target, compares that target, and makes adjustments. Mm-hmm. And so if we do something a little different, here, okay?
Oh, boy.
Catch it. You didn't put you didn't put your hands exactly where he ended up.
Right.
And you didn't know what I was throwing you. Mm-hmm. So right. You looked at that, and on the basis of its speed and whatever it was doing, you decided it was going to be someplace. And you continued then to make adjustments. Okay?
Okay.
Well, this is working in somewhat the same way, but now let's see what happens. Let's see what happens if you have a problem with your cerebellum. If you have a problem with your cerebellum,
please don't throw that.
If you have a problem with your cerebellum, you go to reach for that. Okay. What happens is, as you get closer and closer and closer, you get farther and farther and farther. So the movement, if this was a critically damped system, you go pick it up. But in the problem where you have a problem with part of your cerebellum, as I go toward that, my oscillation gets worse and worse and worse, and my estimate and feedback is not interpreted appropriately, and I have an uncontrolled system, they say.
Okay.
So we're looking at the opposite. But it illustrates the difference between an overdamped system and underdamped system.
Can you give an example of what it is?
Of what a disturbance might be.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Okay.
So funny.
I would do this, but I think I was done. Normally do you turn the alarm off?
Oh yeah.
Right?
At least twice.
And at 7:15 you wake up and you say, oh my God. And you jump out of bed.
That's an alarm clock disturbance. Yeah. Yeah, alarm clock is.
Well, what is that disturbance? What happened? She went from a horizontal position to a vertical position. And from what we were talking about before, what happened, do you think, to the blood pressure around the aorta? Did it increase? It decreased. Why? Because now you have gravity pushing down. So that decreases. And what does this system do? This system causes an increase in heart rate, contractility, venomotor motor tone, and total periphery resistance, which causes then that pressure to go back up close to normal. Disturbance is anything that's going to change the arterial pressure. And we'll talk about some more of those. Anything will change, anything that causes a change in the arterial pressure. So here's another disturbance. This is on page 54. That says, let's go back to our Seymour Fish situation. Seymour Fish, we said that one of the requirements was that the flow into the tank had to match the metabolic activity of the tank. And how did you guys decide you might do that? What did you want to put the sensors in there? What were you measuring?
Oxygen.
What? Level of nutrients.
Leveled wings. So now if we go back, if we go to our cardiovascular model, let's talk specifically about this bed. So if that's the leg artery, what is this bed? What's it going to? What kind of tissue?
Muscle.
So the skeletal muscle. Okay. What's the valve? What would you say the valve is that's going to adjust the flow into here? The arterial. So now, what kinds of signals might you want to affect the flow? Now, remember now that we're not talking about local pressure, we're talking about adjustment of flow. Now we're talking about local blood flow. And in your Seymour Fish design, local blood flow was governed first and foremost. In your Seymour Fish model, local blood flow was governed.
A valve. A pump valve.
Locally.
Locally was a valve. Water flow, whatever.
You mean to be like this one? No, but you had some good ideas. You had some good ideas. And so we had local control. And so we're looking now at local control. We had central control, too. We'll come back to that in a couple of minutes. But we had local control that was adjusting blood flow into this tissue bed based on the metabolic needs.
Restricting
the... Well, we didn't have a regular.
Yeah, ball
valve. Some sort of... So what do you think that smooth muscle, in those arterioles might be sensitive to? Might be sensitive to stretch, but that's not what we're talking about here. What might they be sensitive to? Oxygen. Low oxygen. Low oxygen. Okay, what do you think they'll do in low oxygen states?
Open. Relax.
Dilate. Okay, what else do you think might be sensitive to?
CO2.
CO2 buildup. And what do you think they'll do with CO2 buildup?
Dilate.
Okay. What else? You bought it down. pH. So is it sensitive to pH, do you think?
Sure.
Or is it sensitive to something else? What's doing the sense? What is it sensing? Is it sensing the pH, or is it sensing something else? Hydrogen. Sensing hydrogen ion, because I don't think you can calculate anything larger than this. So it's not really sensing pH, it's sensing hydrogen ion concentration. Okay, do you think that there may be some other things that might also sense? Glucose? Not so much
calcium.
So on the next page,
list of what blood pressure is sensitive to? Is there a list? What we're talking about? We're talking about things that affect blood pressure.
Yes. Things that can control it and what, where they're sensitive, where the effectors are. One question, what answer is there looking for?
On the next page, we have a table.
Okay.
The table says that there are local things that affect and control the radio. Local vasoconstriction and vasodilation. And we see that there are some vasoconstrictors that are local, and we see that mostly vasodilators, we say decreased oxygen, potassium citrate, hypomorality, adenosine, which is a byproduct, some endocrine stuff, nitric oxide, which is a byproduct of various things.
How is epinephrine both?
How is epinephrine what?
How does it function as both a vasoconstrictor and a vasodilator?
How would epinephrine function as both a vasoconstrictor and a vasodilator?
The lack or presence of it?
No. The presence of it might act as a vasodilator someplace and as a vasoconstrictor someplace else.
Well, it's just a neuromuscular junction. Whether it's an excitatory and inhibitory.
It has two types of receptors.
Right.
Okay. Or more. Depends on the receptor.
It's excitatory.
So what we see in this picture is that there is local control of blood flow. And that local control, do you have fun? Okay. Fine. So there's local control of blood flow. And what is this involved? What are those two boxes involved?
Two boxes. What?
Repeat. Well, local control comes where do you think from? Something what? So where is that? Is that local? Oh, what must it be then if it's local?
Good guess.
Far away. Where does that sympathetic and parasympathetic system originate from? Where is the hypothalamus? In the brain. Where is that compared to local? Not local. Central. It's not extrinsic. It's not outside the system. Intrinsic to the system. So now we see there's local control and there's central control. And we want to see what the balance of that is. So, let's take a break here.
Sweet.
Stage fright.
And everything to constricting the reaction to produce heat, which is raising the local temperature.
So you think he's got a local increased temperature, that's why he's clammy?
I think the clammy sweaty.
I think the sympathetic nervous system, when it stimulates the vasoconstriction, will also cause other reactions that it already has, which is clamminess. So when you get nervous, you get clammy, and that's one of the other reactions.
What she said was that he's a clam because his sympathetic nervous system is active. Why is the sympathetic nervous system active? Trying to regulate blood pressure. My skin isn't clammy. And the sympathetic nervous system is regulating my blood pressure.
Yeah, but you're not happy.
Pardon?
You're not half dead.
I'm not half dead.
How old is he?
It's not right. So is this pale and clamminess a purposeful activity? Or is it a byproduct?
A byproduct.
It's something that the sympathetic nervous system does. And the sympathetic nervous system is quite active here. Why? Because the blood pressure is very low.
What
thought is that he was in that situation while somebody was shooting at him hours earlier. But I don't know how to interpret that. In the flight or fight description, I don't know how to interpret that. Is it true that his sympathetic nervous system is very active? Yes. Is it true that his system is being stressed? Yes. But he's not trying to fight or flight. He's trying to do is compensate for blood loss. And so it's just a matter of the image that's brought about by fight or flight, I think, is an erroneous image. The fact that his sympathetics are very active is very appropriate. Why is he clammy? What does clammy mean? Sweaty. Why is he sweaty?
I don't really know.
Because what?
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I feel like if I got shot, and then 3 hours later, even though there's not that immediate like fight or flight, like in the midst of war at the moment, but maybe you're in ICU or something and you're losing blood like that, I think you'd still be in a fight or flight. Hormonal situation because you're fighting to live. So I would say
that. I would prefer that you think about that as an extreme sympathetic response. I think of fight or flight. That doesn't answer why is he clammy, Megan?
Is he sweaty because the hormones produced by the situation that they also trigger the sweat as well as the vasodilation?
So what Megan said, which was very interesting, and nobody said it before that, is that he's sweaty. What stimulates sweat pleasure, do you think?
Sympathetic
nervous system. You told me that. You told me it was clammy. You know, and I've lived for about 30 years in the Northwest, and that means
that,
to me.
Sympathetic nervous system.
Ivor was a restaurateur that sold clam chowder and made the phrase
it's like
clam.
Skippers. You guys have Skippers?
Dancing clams on the beach and things like that.
You gotta go down to the pier and get some French fries and have the seagulls attack you for French fries.
What's important to realize now is that he's not sweat. What?
The
for those of you who think in one way or another that the system does what it's important to do what effect does his sweating have on his blood pressure? It's going to decrease in why? Because you're losing volume. So that's not really helping. Okay, let's see what's going on next. Why are his peripheral pulses weak?
Because
pressure is low because he's got low volume in the system. Okay. So let's see. Taking a surgery where his wounds are repaired. So they plug the hole. They gave 2 liters of cold blood intravenously, and his color returns. His heart slows to 90 beats per minute, and his blood pressure increases to 120 over 7. So, tell me what happened here. Start with 2 liters of cold blood administered intravenously.
What does that mean, cold blood?
As opposed to plasma.
Separated,
oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So tell me what, start with 2 liters of whole blood administered
like whole milk.
And end with the heartbeat of 90 minutes, blood pressure 100%, 20%.
Yes.
The volume is restored. An increase in pressure, okay. what? So, okay, the air pressure increases and our stroke volume can increase, okay? Cardiac output increases. So the pressure in the artery is increasing, okay? So we started out now, let's review now where we've gone here. We started out with 2 liters of blood was administered into the venous system. As a result of that, we looked at our cardiac output in the bottle and we said that as a result of that, right atrial pressure would be increased. As a result of that, preload is increased. As a result of that, strength of contraction is going to be increased. As a result of that, stroke volume is going to be increased. As a result of that, arterial pressure will be increased. Now what? So now you said that the pressure increases, the signal back to the comparator is increased, the air signal is decreased, the controller interprets that, and does what?
Decreases the heart rate.
And what is the autonomic response in this case? So less sympathetic to cause what to happen? Decreased arterial or constriction, so total peripheral resistance is going to be decreased. So decrease the heart rate. Decrease contractility. And what's going to happen as a result of that?
Its color will be normal.
Muscles that are constricted. Contractility is a word that we reserve for ventricular muscles. They reflect the strength of the contraction resulting from the amount of calcium in the plasma.
Only for ventricular muscles?
Only for ventricular muscles. I guess you could say something about smooth muscle because smooth muscle you get more calcium from the exercise, but we don't need to talk about it.
So during the time that he has sustained blood loss, the muscle will be more constrictive to make sure that
the motor tone would be more increased.
Would be increased so that the pressure is maintained through the venous system for what little blood is there.
I will caution you about the word constriction.
Okay.
Because constriction to a lot of you guys means about 16 different things. To me, it means something very, very specific. This tube is constricted at this point, narrowed at that point. And so I think about constriction as being an impediment to flow. If I think about increased venomotor tone, then I think about a generalized increase in the muscle, longitudinal muscle, which is tending to push in and not change the radius or diameter of the vessel that much, but to make the wall thicker. So when I think of constriction, I think of arterioles. When I think of venomotor tone, I think of an increased motor tone in the vein. If I think of constriction of a vein, that means that there's something pushing on the outside of the vein, or there's a big blood clot, or an embolus someplace in the vein that's constricting flow. I think about it in terms of flow. Okay. So let's recap now.
Okay, recap.
What you told me is that with 2 liters of volume in the veins, I'm going to have more flow to the right atrium. As a result of that, my atrial pressure will increase. As a result of that, filling pressure increases. As a result of that, ventricular filling will increase. And preload will increase. As a result of that, the strength of contraction will increase. And stroke volume will increase. cardiac output will increase. With cardiac output being increased, the pressure will go up. And now, we saw, now nothing has happened in this model so far. Nothing has happened to contractility. Nothing has happened to heart rate. And nothing has happened to total peripheral resistance. And now, in response to the increased blood pressure, solely because of the increased volume, the baroreceptors have measured a higher pressure, sent that signal to the brain. The brain has analyzed that signal and now decreased the error message. And so the error message, the decrease in error message has been caused by the result in the sympathetics decreasing heart rate, decreasing total peripheral resistance, decreasing contractility, probably decreasing the aortic tone to some extent. And that's where we are here. Does that make sense to everybody? You should be able to follow that on your diagram. Within a half hour, however, so the guy's wounds are plugged, give him some volume. Within a half hour, his blood pressure falls to 70 over 40. Although his color is normal and peripheral pulses are full, and his heart rate is now 120. What happened?
He's not sweating, does that mean it's not a specific response to the heart? Could the heart rate have increased, or is it a different type of pulse?
Well, we don't know anything about his sweating, but we can assume, I can tell you maybe he's not sweating.
Just your body's response to now it's normal, now it can actually give blood supply to your skin.
Your body's response?
Yeah.
I don't buy body.
I don't either.
Chelsea?
Is it
because
he's bleeding internally?
Sorry?
Is it because he's bleeding internally?
No, he's not bleeding internally, actually.
Otherwise, he would be pale again.
Wait a second.
Not like bleeding. I don't.
straight.
So when you get your scare, there's more
blood. And why is there more blood flowing to your tissue bed?
Right. Opening.
Oh, I don't know about this neat stuff.
Right.
Dig it?
Is it because when he was injured and the state where all the pressure fit to do the repair, all of his, like the capillary beds and all the areas where you have extra blood stored got drained out and now he's refilling that area?
What would cause that to happen?
Sympathetic response.
Shunts.
Is it gestures?
So I'm a little confused about all this talk. Because now we're talking about blood flow is going to here because it needs it. Blood flow is going there because we're going to repair. And I haven't heard anything very much about the mechanism by which blood flows and why it would go there. Because the same volume is spreading out over a larger surface area.
So the central volume is decreased. Central volume is decreased. Blood pressure is decreased. And what Laura said then is the baroreceptors, baroreceptors are detecting a low pressure and now reactivating the baroreceptor reflex. Megan? Do you have a question? All right. So what did you learn from this about arterial or resistance? Responsive to what?
Yeah.
Question was, what did we learn about this? How come, or maybe I should ask another question. How come, if during this period of time, those tissues were metabolizing and using oxygen, producing CO2, producing waste products, and doing all that stuff, and
overridden by the central
substances, how come they didn't vasodilate before?
Central nervous system.
Because the
overriding it.
Because the body was too busy.
Sympathetic response overrides it.
Yeah, what's your thought?
I was thinking that since the sympathetic system slowed down as a whole, then there isn't much force acting on the veins. So then there isn't much blood returning to the heart.
As? Which is why your blood pressure falls.
Well, that's true to some extent. So what you said is the venous motor tone decreased because the pressure was higher. But I think that's going to be tempered a little bit. It's certainly not going to explain why the blood pressure has fallen as much as it has. And the redistribution of blood flow to the periphery is a very good explanation for that. But a lot of that central volume is now in the periphery. My question was, how come it didn't happen earlier?
Synthetic response overriding it. The brain is better than the local controls. Yeah, yeah.
Central control overrides the local control.
Don't want to do it wrong.
And when the central control decreases, the local control is stronger. And it's not harder. It's like the feds and the local cops. That's right. It's like the FBI, at least the FBI's impression of what they do. The FBI, according to the show, the FBI versus the local cop. Well, I don't know. How long do you think this... Would I do anything to this guy?
No, because...
How long do you think... Or what would happen if I gave some more blood?
You'd have 2 minutes.
What would happen?
Well, can I ask another question? Would this be the response that you would look for if everything was going right in this situation? Or is this a really bad thing to happen after he gets more blood?
Oh.
Or is this good?
Okay.
I think it would be normal.
As stated, the question is, well, like, is this a response I would look for? Or is this a really bad response? This is a response that they sense. And so I guess part of the question is that you're asking is, do I worry about it? What do you think?
I think that it'll go back to blood pressure on its own after all the peripheral tissues have removed the waste products, and then we can waste products. The local response will again vasoconstrict and then reach the state. So the reason I say that is because just the normal state, because we were there. So you have enough blood in the system to have a normal blood pressure and heart rate. So adding more blood would over.
So what Kelly said was, if the reason that this vasodilation occurred is because there wasn't enough oxygen, but there were too many metabolites in the tissues. As the blood flow increased, what's going to happen to the level of metabolites? What's going to happen to the tissues? And what's going to happen to the oxygen level?
oxygen level will
increase,
and the metabolite level will
decrease.
And so what's going to happen to the arteriolar state as that happens?
They'll start to constrict again.
They'll constrict again.
Right.
You'll end up with some normalized system.
Right.
So are we kind of looking at the two extremes of the tone of the veins? At first, like they're all, or not, arterioles, where they're completely shut off because they're trying to get all the blood diverted to the brain, keep it alive. So the initial pressure, isn't that when everything's closed? Still that 120 over 70 that's normal that we're seeing? Then everything opens up and that's whenever, like, blood goes to all the peripheral tissues again, so we see this low. And we're shooting for somewhere in the middle, or are we still going to have to add a little bit more blood because initially those things are pretty much closed off and they're never, you don't really want them to be entirely closed off?
Well, I think we've probably given enough blood. They'll probably stabilize. There is a little bit that I find disturbing in the conversation. And what I find disturbing in the conversation is that the reasons that you're attributing to things happening is because of what the system wants to do or needs to do to get back in a state that you think it should be in. So now if we repeat what you said, I remember what you said, if we repeat what you said in mechanistic terms, okay, what you said was, he's lost a lot of blood. As a result of that, the baroreceptor reflex has been activated to some large amount. And as a result of that, there's been peripheral vasoconstriction. It has overridden or had a greater influence on arteriolar resistance than local factors. And also what has increased is heart rate has increased, cardiac contractility has increased, the venous tone has increased. We didn't see a whole lot of effect of that because the volume of the system was decreased. Now, for those folks who want to think about the system is always trying to fix itself and think about this baroreceptor reflex, how advantageous in this situation is it to have a baroreceptor reflex? So he gets shot.
Oh, it's very.
Right?
Yeah,
he gets a hole in a major vessel.
Right.
Blood pressure drops. And what does the system try to do?
Increase
blood pressure. And what happens as a result of that? He pumps it out faster. He bleeds more. It's not really working to the benefit of the system.
Yeah, but his brain has to. You have to make sure the brain gets enough. Otherwise, you're going to die anyway.
You have to make sure that the brain gets enough. The point is that whatever the system tries to do, it hastens the bleeding out and the killing of the organism.
Yeah, sure.
So
it can't hibernate
the
brain, though.
You can't say, oh, this is going to fix itself, or this is always trying to fix itself. The system responds in the way that the system is designed to respond, and the consequences are what the consequences are. So now what's happened here? What's happened here is he's bled. His blood volume has decreased. The sympathetic nervous system has been active and increased heart rate, contractility, venous motor tone, and total peripheral resistance. The increase in total peripheral resistance by action of the sympathetics on the arteriole is greater than the influence of the local factors. And so the net result is vasoconstriction. We come along and plug the hole. System doesn't plug the hole. We plug the hole. We put in volume. And as a result of that, blood pressure gets restored toward normal. With that blood pressure being restored toward normal, the baroreceptor reflex is no longer as active. The vasoconstriction in the periphery induced by the sympathetics has decreased. Now what you see happening, and the heart rate has decreased, the venous motor tone has decreased, the contractility has decreased. Now what's happened is that the local factors become the dominant factors
to regulate or to controlling blood flow in the periphery, and they open up. And what happens is his blood gets distributed, redistributed from the central compartments to peripheral compartments. As a result of that, the central volume decreases, his arterial blood pressure falls, the baroreceptor reflex responds, and increases heart rate. It's going to increase heart rate, and it's going to increase vasoconstriction, it's going to increase venomotor contractility. And what happens over time now, and there's some balance to this, but over time, the things that are causing the local vasodilation are going to be washed out of the tissues. And they're going to, blood's going to return to the lungs, and he's going to get rid of CO2, and he's going to get rid of oxygen. Okay? Blood's going to go to the liver, and he's going to remove some things. Blood's going to go to the kidney, he's going to remove some things. And over time, then, that level of local control is going to diminish, and blood will then be distributed back for normal distribution.
Pressure
will
rise again. Okay. How do you know when he gets enough blood? Well, I think you'd have similar thing to this, but his color wouldn't be normal. Can you give him enough blood?
So as that local control returns and you start getting more vasoconstriction of the arterial, and the volume in the arterial blood pressure is going to increase, and the effect of the baroreceptor reflex is going to increase.
Central control of
what we found is that everybody had a hear the question.
No.
The question is. When I sit in the back of the room, they say, what was the question? They say, damn, Odell interrupts all the time. That's what the question he's trying to answer. The question. Oh, sorry. Got carried away. Question was, could we again review this local control, central control balance? And what we saw was on that table or that figure, let's see.
55.
On F55, we see that there are three factors, three major factors that influence local arterial constriction. One are local factors that are generated in the tissue and accumulate in tissues, diffuse in tissues back to where the arterioles are and have local effects or have direct effects on that smooth muscle. The second was a hormonal influence. Hormonal things can affect the vasoconstriction. And epinephrine and epinephrine is one of those hormones. Cortisol is another hormone. We'll see a bunch of other things later on. And the third thing there is the sympathetic nervous system. So norepinephrine has an effect. Epinephrine through stimulation of the adrenal medulla has an effect. That's sympathetic. So we're seeing a balance, constant balance between those two things. And what we found in this guy is that regardless of the amount of metabolite buildup of the local control, the sympathetic nervous system can stimulate that smooth muscle enough to really have the biggest effect and close that bed down. Okay? Why? I don't care why. You guys care why. Oh, because it needs to do this and it wants to do that. Well, because there are more receptors and there's more response for the norepinephrine than there is for the local factor. And so as we saw, what happened then is that in time, as the system improved, we saw the interplay between the local control
between local control and central control.
We need to sing happy birthday.
Who?
Happy birthday to you.
We're doing it over.